Hello and welcome to the Happy Hour. I'm your host, Tony Yang, and joining me as always are my fellow compatriots, Alex Cortez and Clark Price. How are you both doing today? And especially let's start with Clark, since you had some medical maladies. How is your pain level today?
Well, I think I described, did I not, that I was a victim of a robbery and I was injured in the process. And everyone who's been the victim of crime has a certain post-traumatic stress disorder, but I had real trauma that, to go with it. And so I had to have surgery. And although the perpetrators were arrested, I somehow, and my property was retrieved by the sheriff, I still haven't gotten that back. But what I did get was surgery and a lot of pain. And I have to say that UCLA took care of me very well. And I recuperated right after the surgery at UCLA for several days. And then today I had the sutures out. And but I have to tell you that this idea that the Democratic Party can not address crime and not have a policy that really meets the challenge of crime is a big mistake, because the fear of crime is a reality and the trauma of crime is a reality. And apparently, you know, I'm right now at my mom's house, and there's a shopping center nearby, and there are two pharmacies there, and one of them has unstocked the shelves. And I said, why is this happening? It says, well, because people are stealing everything. And I was walking through it last night, and somebody was buying a deodorant, and they had to open up a case, which sent off an alarm and stuff. So I'm thinking that a crime of all types is a real issue. And, well, we got to do something because it's probably going to affect the outcome of the presidential election, because it plays it at all levels. So how it's done and how it's done properly and how it mitigates crime and mitigates the victimization that takes place from crime has to be addressed. I don't know as much as I need to know to speak about it authoritatively, except from the viewpoint now at this point in my life, having avoided crime, except I did have my car stolen, but having avoided it for most of my life until recently and the trauma that came with it, that's a limited experience of it. So you ask me how I'm doing, that's how I'm doing. Getting better, but really cautious to the point of paranoia. So, which is part of the trauma.
Well, I mean, you could take a look at the crime statistics, and they have gone up marginally over the last few years, but they're still low. In fact, violent crime is very low.
Well, when you say that they're low, here's the thing I'm talking about, not the actual crime figures. I'm talking about the perception of crime.
Right.
And you say they're low, but once you experience crime, they're just not low enough. And also, there is a public perception that crime is rampant because the internet has made it possible to have, I don't know what they're called, but flash mob crime. And so
organized retail theft.
Yeah. So there's
that's what it is.
And then there's also, I recently went to the auto show at the LA Convention Center. And so they had a thing where it was like, first of all, the auto show is greatly diminished because auto manufacturers aren't really, in some cases, they are sure that they they can sell all they need to sell by using the internet. And Tesla would be an example of that. Other manufacturers who are trying to break through, maybe the internet isn't working for them, have decided they're going to do it. I mean, the show, I think I told you, was dominated by Hyundai, by the Korean manufacturers. So in the case of, there's a smaller manufacturer trying to compete with Tesla named Lucid. And so they had a bunch of their cars lined up, like 10 cars lined up. And then a flash mob of, I don't know what this is called. People get together, they close off these drivers close off the streets, and then they drive around in circles and drift. That's the term. Yes. So they had a street
sideshow. It's a sideshow.
Then all of these people. There's a mob that takes place there. They're intimidating people going to the car show. And then there are people getting up on these new Lucid cars that are lined up. And I saw this hopping up and down on them. So they're denting the, I mean, these cars are, you know, perhaps not completely ruined, but grievously damaged and unsaleable. So, and they're not cheap, those cars, like that's about 100,000. So, so what is that going to do to the next year's auto show? Oh, and the police couldn't get through because the road was completely blocked.
Right. Off.
So,
there's a lot of this that's driven by ineffectual laws that have yet to be
updated.
I mean, RICO wasn't designed for this, but there needs to be something where if you organize a retail theft group using social media, hey, this should be enhancement behind it. I mean, that's what's honestly driving a lot of this, and the narrative is overblown and corporate America plays into it. Some of the stores, notably in California, like Target, Safeway, for example, they've been closing and they've been citing retail theft when in fact it's just their stores are underperforming.
Well, they get, let's face it, they're going to have a much higher profit margin, right, if they close brick and mortar and sell online. I mean, my brother was just sharing a story. He was buying a present, and the same thing, same item, was cheaper if you bought it online than buying it at the store on site and actually going to pick it up there. So not like 50%, and to the point that the owners were, or not the owners, the employees were sharing with them, well, we want people to buy these online. We're encouraging folks to buy online.
Let me back us up with some data first. Okay. This is from Public Policy Institute of California. This is in the period between 21 and 22. We don't have the data for 23 yet, but 21, 22 data, the highest rate of violent crime. Anyone want to venture a guess? What region of the state had the most violent crime?
What dates or what?
2022.
What areas?
Yeah. The highest rate of violent crime in the state of California is in the San Joaquin Valley.
Well, I think in terms of – this is something I've been discussing with people. I guess I can reveal my terrible secret. I'm a Democrat, and I talk to Democrats about strategy. And I'm a member of every club that – I used to say I would never be a member of any club that would have me as a member, but unfortunately I now have to compromise that I'm in every Democratic club you can think of. And but in talking to people, guests who show up and people who are policy makers and legislators and so on, this is an issue that they're very interested in because of how it works in the public mind. And just quoting statistics does not answer the emotional question, because if you've noticed, Donald Trump, and he is the leader of the Republican Party, He doesn't appeal to the intellect.
No.
He appeals to visceral emotions, and he stokes anger and fear, which pushes anger. So, in fact, recently, these people, they're poisoning our blood. They're poisoning the blood. I mean, what a lunatic. And so, yeah. So, but when you say stuff like that, it just, you've got to be able to deal with it. We have to have a policy that's, and a presence that's good on crime, that talks about it in a realistic way. And a part of it has got to be I think where people are educated and have opportunity, there is less crime. And so that's part of it, but a holistic approach to it that makes sense and ameliorates the fear, especially if you've been a victim of crime. I'm telling you, it's you go into an irrational paranoia, or maybe it's rational.
It's rational in your mind, Clark, but it's also why we don't make you part of the jury or the judge or the executioner, right?
I was on a jury on a murder trial for 6 weeks.
Yeah, but you weren't the one experience. You weren't a victim of said crime.
No, I wasn't.
Yeah,
because I wouldn't be here.
Right. Right.
Murder trial. So
you know, and I think there is a better discussion about policing that needs to happen, if not more policing, but proper policing. And I think we're just grappling with it. I think there's a transition in how we view policing, how policing should be done. And we're also a society, for whatever reason, the last couple of years, that I feel like has lost its sanity when it comes to just being personable to one another. There's such hostility because of our tribalism, I think.
I think that's true. Anyway, I didn't mean to hijack the conversation with
I think it's a relevant conversation. I mean, are we more tribalist now than we were several years ago? I mean,
yes.
Yes.
We have a movie that's coming out, you know, it's produced by Kirsten Dunst. This is a second American Civil War. Then I'm like, really? Are we here where that can become a mainstream movie, that the Overton window has moved enough with regards to a Civil War?
Who's the director? I think what the director on that is a really good director. I expect that to be a really good movie. It's Alexander something or other, I think.
Right. It's the same director that did 28 Days Later. What's interesting is
I don't think that's the director. That's a different director.
It's Alex Garland's.
Alex Garland. Yeah, he did Oblivion, I think it was called.
Right.
And he's a really, really good director. So this is not going to be a stupid movie. This is going to be an interesting, very informed movie. And also quite timely, because that's exactly what Trump is trying to. That's what the right wing has been going towards, a civil war. That's what the Turner Diaries have been about.
He wrote the screenplay for 28 Days Later. I just want you to know that.
Oh, but he wasn't the director.
No, no, no.
Yeah.
And so, go ahead, Alex.
So if you get a chance, watch the latest America at a Crossroads with Judy Woodruff. It was out a couple of days ago, and I didn't watch the whole thing. I didn't watch it from the beginning. I caught the last half, but it's pretty good. And it talks about this very subject. I mean, they brought folks from different, on both sides, you know, speak on their issues and views. And they touched on a lot of things we've talked about this year. I know this is kind of a year in review kind of show or episode here, but. We've talked about how journalism, particularly good journalism at sort of the small local markets, is disappearing. And now you're getting more sensationalized, more national news stories. And I think some of the points that we're making are pretty valid and resonate with the topics and conversations we had throughout the year this particular year since on this particular show. So,
well, I think leadership is super important, and what Donald Trump, some of the bad tendencies of the right wing have been galvanized and pushed into an intensification by his misleadership. And that misleadership is based in self-interest because, I mean, when he, I think the number one issue as we're looking back over the year is this issue. It is Donald Trump and the threat to, and I've said it, I don't say the threat to our democracy, certainly, but our threat to the United States, threat to America, and a threat to the world. Because this, what this guy did during his presidency was completely malignant. And then at the culmination of it on January 6th, he fomented an attempt to overthrow the United States, not just to overturn the election, but to overthrow the United States, the order, the law and order of the United States. And he did it on a completely false pretext, which was that it had been stolen from him. And the only way the election had been stolen, it wasn't honest. And the only way was to use violence to stop Joe Biden from being elected and or put in office. Now, what does an honest person do who feels wronged? Like if you had, and this example has been used before, if you had got a bank statement and oh my God, it's $10 off. They stole $10 from me. You go to the bank, you pull out a gun. Show the teller that you want the $10 back. They say no. You start shooting it up. People get killed, but it turns out it was all okay because you thought that you had something stolen from. No, that's not what an honest person does. That's not honest. What an honest person does is they'll file a complaint, they'll go through a process, and they'll do it that way. The only reason he did what he did was because it was fraudulent. It was fraudulent from the beginning. And he's undertaking a fraudulent campaign right now to provoke a civil war unless he is installed as a dictator. And he's not making any, I mean, the approach he's taking, I think I sent you a cartoon from the New Yorker, both of you, which was, lambs in a pasture, and there's a billboard there with a picture of a wolf, and underneath the picture it says, "I'm going to eat you," and then the lambs are saying to each other, "He says it like it is." Yeah. That's what we're dealing with.
Yeah, that same cartoon is the same. Remember a few days earlier where I quoted he tells it like it is. I was quoting the cartoon.
I think it's like many New Yorker cartoons, a brilliant cartoon, and it really captures this thing and that low information voters have their heads filled up with bad information by the misleader Donald Trump, who really I think is a threat to let's not shortchange him to the entire world. As David K. Johnston has said, I think the greatest chronicler of the life and times of Donald Trump, for Pulitzer Prize winner, over 35 years following Donald Trump, says he's the greatest con artist in the history of the world. And there's no good intentions for anyone other than himself. And the thing that foolish supporters believe is that if he's elected president, that they will benefit from it. They will not benefit. Once the vote he's back in, he will never leave. And their vote and their concerns will be nothing to him. He doesn't need them anymore. He'll manipulate them. This is what these guys do. He'll manipulate them until he gets the power. Then with that power, he will steal everything from everybody forever. This is who he is. Sorry to talk so much. I haven't even had any coffee. This is just normal, unfortunately.
Well, we're talking big issues for the year. But speaking of big issues, and certainly something much more up more Alex's avenue for sure. We've had six straight months of the highest global temperatures we have ever recorded. Mm-hmm. I think that is topic number one, right, Alex? The extreme distortion of temperature and weather patterns and global warming is here. I mean, all you have to do is take a look at the disastrous amount of water that came down in Ventura County just these past couple of days.
And let's qualify it. This is certainly man-driven. This is something that humankind has been the catalyst for. I mean, have we seen cycles of carbon dioxide building up in the atmosphere, greenhouse gases? Yes, but these were things, events as a result of cataclysms cataclysms like super volcanoes or asteroids. But this is all on us. I mean, we're burning more, putting more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere than we are fixing through allowing plants and other organisms, photosynthetic organisms, to sequester it from the atmosphere. So we have this accumulation of greenhouse gases and warming of the planet in a very narrow window. Talking about things that maybe took thousands of years to build up. Just this is happening in a very narrow time scale. Industrial Revolution and onward. That's not looking good, and particularly when most of our population is living in coastal areas are largely to be affected and be underwater if seawater rises. So, yeah, this is an alarming times, but
we're the frog being slowly cooked, right?
It's also has a very much a political context, because we have one party that acknowledges the reality of global warming and is making some moves to deal with it, but I'd say the moves are inadequate. And then in the other party, I think, is courting debt by ignoring the truth. Well, actually, I think they know what the truth is. Exxon knew what it was. They conducted studies decades ago. They knew what was happening and where it was going. This is about, again, using low information people, manipulating them through media, through disinformation campaigns, in order to increase the flow of wealth to people who believe that I'm going to get mine now. Who cares about the future? I'll be dead. And Republicans have said that. Even George W. Bush said something like that. Why do I care about what history says about me? I'll be dead. They're just the greed. It's like, get it now. Greed is good. This is what makes the world go round. And that's their ethos. So unfortunately, the consequences of this are going to be, it's not just unpleasant. I've spoken to scientists who have said this could be another mass extinction on the planet. Mm-hmm. And the argument, more and more, the argument is like, why wouldn't it be? So it's serious. It's dead serious. And this is also why I think one of our greatest thinkers, who I'm so glad is still out there in his 90s, Noam Chomsky, has said that the Republican Party is the most dangerous entity in human history. So here we have them in total denial on global warming and why it's caused. And on that, and then we have our president who is, I think, deranged, not simply the misleader or greatest con man in human history, but seriously deranged and capable of misuse of nuclear weapons. So let's add that into the mix. And in his first campaign, 2015, was saying, we have all these nuclear weapons. We can't use them. Why can't we use them? So that's what he's thinking about. That's what's on his mind. And now he's quoting Hitler and says he's not, that he never read Mein Kampf. But actually, Ivana Trump said that it was Ivanka, anyway, his first wife, said that the book he had on his bedstand was Hitler's second book, first being Mein Kampf. The second one was The New World Order, which is a collection of Hitler's speeches. So he certainly has had proximity to Hitler, and he certainly seemed to admire Hitler. And now he's quoting Hitler. By the way, it's probably the case that when he says, I never read Mein Kampf, the way he pronounced it, the reality is probably he didn't read it, but Bannon read it. Stephen Miller read it, and those two Nosferatus are the people that are running this campaign, that are whispering in this guy's ear. This is this is what the Republican Party has become, and I think that never has there been a more twisted political manifestation on this level in American history. This is a monster, yeah, capable of very bad things.
I mean, it was as history taught us, that was a disastrous, dire consequences. But as history showed us, how did it turn out for them in the end? That's the end they're going to have too.
I'm absolutely certain they'll have it, but in order to get to that, I'd rather preclude the whole thing.
Me too. I'm the same. I'm just saying it's a things will repeat themselves, and unless we learn from it and stop it while we can.
Yeah, I think the low information voters have got to stop reading QAnon blogs and start getting into real information and learning more about history. There are so many times that you go online and you see interviews with people at Trump rallies, and you think, the thing I think more than anything else is, what is wrong with the educational system? They can't do any kind of critical reasoning. They can't think it through. They're completely captured by the grievance emotion.
And those educational systems have been victims of all the dismantling and all the defunding and all the
that's right. Training.
So it's all part of the boy that only benefits the
yeah, few. But most of these guys are old. The geezers who,
that's not Enrico Tarrio. Enrico,
most of them are like, pre or post diabetic. They've got, replaced knees and yeah, these guys have, what's that?
I said, yeah.
I know, but the point I'm making is that they were educated going back to their grade school, back when the school system seemed to have been functioning pretty well. I mean, that's the system that we all went through. I mean, I had some private school education and, well, yeah, up until the fifth grade, I guess. I was in a private school, which was a kind of an advantage, actually, because they were so, you know, rigorous. But anyway, I certainly experienced public schools and I thought they were pretty good. So, you know, these people were growing up in the heartland or the mostly East Coast, some on the West Coast, the people that went into the Capitol on January 6th. Should have been, you know, decently educated. I mean, high school education, and some of them are college education. This was studied by a professor, did an analysis of this, and but it really seems to have failed them, or maybe there are some people that are just, you know, that this is what. There are, you know, personality types. So if an authoritarian personality type is a person who not only, I mean, some people who have authoritarian personality types want to dominate other people as the authority. And then others who have authoritarian personality types want to be dominated and be told what to do. They want the strong leader. Some would say they wanted a strong father figure, or a tribal leader. And, they certainly have that in Donald Trump, who makes it completely clear that he wants to run everything. I think not to serve. This is not Martin Luther King talking about servant leadership. This is a person who wants to benefit himself from being in a position of opportunism. The opportunity, being a leader means that you have the best opportunity to misuse that leadership, misuse the power that you are given for that purpose of leadership. So
I think the continuation of Trump's popularity and hold has much more to do with rather his unique ability and empathy at some level, to tap into the empathy of people to identify with him. I'm an example of the same grievances you have. And there's a sort of social psychology to that really works. Because he plays the same victimhood that they understand in language that these aggrieved people can understand.
Okay. Here's
which is very base. It's
more simple than that. This dude I don't think he could relate to anybody at all, but he really worked at it. And what it is, him as a performer, him being in front of audiences, him trying things, having some things work, other things not working. He is a performer and he is an entertainer who also has an agenda. And he's using that skill that he has developed. I understand that he doesn't really have any friends. Nobody is close to. The family's all estranged. This is him as a performer in front of mass audiences, being on the, Apprentice for 14 years, which is how he cultivated this persona that wasn't even real, that he was some kind of dynamic businessman. He's a serial screw up who put casinos out of business, which have a license to print money. He is just floating on debt. And he has convinced people. I think what he does is they want to be him. They think if he can make it, I can make it. They think that it's the same thing that this prosperity gospel appeals to, also because that he makes people think that he's wealthy when I think it's a fraud. He's floating on debt. He makes people think he's wealthy. It's like, he must be blessed by the good Lord. He's only someone who's got the blessings of from the heavens is going to be successful like Donald Trump. So there's that aspect to it, that he has some kind of touched by God thing going on. And I'm afraid that this is just a con job on a massive level, and he is good at it. So in that regard, that he has some kind of sly senses how to con people, and you have to be sensitive to human nature in order to do that. He's just had the opportunity to cultivate it and cultivate it and cultivate it over time. This is how it's like he's ripped off all of his workers and suppliers and people he's made deals with. He's conned them. And then he's look at his trail of crazy businesses, Trump Steaks, Trump University, all cons. To get to the point where he can get millions of dollars from people for Trump University, you have to be a good con artist. That's what he is. It's more than that he's one of them and can understand them. He just sees what works and uses it. He's manipulated people his entire life, since childhood, when he was a spoiled brat, and now he's a spoiled man who believes he can define reality in the minds of the weak-minded. And he can, because he's practiced at it. This is what he's set his whole life to do. And he is pretty good at it. Pretty good at, let's be frank, at being a criminal. That's how he works.
I mean, the prosperity gospel has always attracted people. I mean, theologically, I've always said that it's attractive because it's an easily manipulated God. If you do X, you get Y. It's kind of not how humanity and life works, but
it's an evangelical con.
Yeah,
it's one of the and by the way, just so in case people don't know, it's like if you give money to Joel Osteen, you'll get it back through magic.
Right.
That's how that works.
And also an element within prosperity gospel, if you've ever seen it, it's also very is also practiced by Trump, is like they like to instill fear in congregants, right? Like if you don't do this, you'll be missing out on these great opportunities and you will suffer with that. And the idea is that, you know, you will have you'll be successful and you'll miss out, right? I mean, that sounds like it's a pyramid scheme. It's like an Amway product. that kind of goes in there. But I think these are sort of just dangerous fusion of elements that I think that's why the base is still with him right now. It's very much a fusion of that prosperity gospel along with xenophobia and racism and anger.
It's every touchstone of American fear since the beginning. And he has all of the, he has that whole Christian nationalist thing going on too. He has the whole consolidation of con artists in every respect.
Right.
In business, in politics, and religion. And if you don't think there are con artists in religion, you are not paying attention at all. So, that's a classic, the religious con artist. So, and kind of an American specialty, I would say. Again, I will quote to Blaise Pascal in terms of how these things can go, or where they can go with you, when you get into religious extremism, when con artistry and egomania and megalomania all combine with religious zeal. Blaise Pascal said, "No man does evil with such zeal as when they do it in the name of God, which they often confuse with themselves and their own greedy purposes." So I think we're at a crux. We're at a crossroads in not only in American history, for sure we are, but also I think in world history, because America is of such a size and such an impact that that what's happening here will impact the entire world in one way or another. And the situation is shaping up to being pretty bad.
Yeah.
And I think it could have all been preempted if we had just enforced the law. I mean, what Donald Trump did on January 6th was con artistry that went into violence. And it was all based in crimes. It should have been prosecuted. And here we are. We're months away from the election. We're 11 months away. And it's not looking good. Although I think the numbers have improved for Biden. Just today I saw something.
They will improve. Trump's support, particularly amongst Republican-leaning independents, is extremely soft. With that, and so I think it's there, and the interesting thing where I think Joe Biden has been, and remember his approval ratings are right about where Barack Obama were in 2012 heading into election. He only needs to get into the 40s or so, because sitting presidents do pretty badly usually going into election years with the approval ratings. But I think where the difference is going to be is that you're going to see at some point, do people really want to go back to that level of craziness and even more crazy with that? Biden's problems have been he's been very soft with the numbers of young people. But Joe Biden has been remarkably facile and moving. Not being in front of the curve of public opinion, but just kind of right behind it. And I actually see him moving his policy on the other big news story of the year on the attacks in Israel. And now Israel's prosecution of a war against Gaza, I think more recently has become more strident in his criticism of Netanyahu. And moving away from that. Now, part of this is a function of Netanyahu being completely unreasonable, as he says, we will continue military operations. And of course, now the Biden administration is asking the question, well, what's the end game? Right.
So are you saying that Joe Biden? It's just better that Joe Biden has acted after 20,000 innocent people have been murdered versus waiting for 25,000 to have been murdered. I'm saying he's way, way, way overdue. And
he's hey, I'm trying to be positive here. At least there's some movement. You know, especially as you said, he's had how long has he had that relationship?
Five decades.
Right. I mean, the fact that he's even moving, I think, is a sign of, you know, of a facile mind, at least.
Well, up until this incident, I was saying that Joe Biden was a good president, but a bad candidate.
Yeah.
And now I think he's really, really stumbled, and he's allowed Israel to go berserk. And rather than, you know what a friend tells another, tells his friend when he's had too much to drink, just stop drinking. I'm taking your keys away. This overreaction has been a shock to the entire world and an offense to humanity, and it is absolutely unacceptable. So and I'm it's not just me saying this, I'd say that Biden has lost the entire voting public under 40. This is people aren't buying this anymore. And the fact is that it's just, you know, they're not doing it out of view. We can see what's happened, even though they've cut off the cell phones and limit news access. It's this is a disgrace. This is a disgrace. And by the way, I think the anti-Semitism that's come out of this, the reaction, as it was, you know, this this has been horrible. This is not an appropriate reaction, because the most strident critics of Israel's behavior that I know of are Jewish. And so, I mean, I think that what's happening in Israel is not about Judaism per se. This is about nationalism and the perils of nationalism, as well as some people there who want to expand their national borders. And anyway, it's shocking. And I think that I don't think Israel is going to recover from this. Also, I don't understand what the hell is Hamas's strategy. What is it that they're doing? What they did on October 7th was certainly heinous and horrible. And was it to provoke this reaction? Was it to get Israel to overreact? Because the price of that is very high. It's 20,000 and could be more. And they seem to be talking like they want this to go on for the benefit of how the public has reacted. But it's unconscionable on both sides.
Keep in mind that we don't think Hamas is the most sane or logical of any political organization. Anyway, I mean, it is.
There's some strategy to it. I mean, they did what they did. They took hostages, and they're now saying they don't want to negotiate with the hostages for a ceasefire. And I'll tell you why here's something I do understand about Hamas. That's all they have.
Right.
They have nothing. They only have the hostages. That's the only negotiating thing they have. So what's the end game for Hamas? And what's the end game for Israel? I don't get it.
I think part of it was a emotional reaction to the pending peace deal between Saudi Arabia and Israel. It's an odd lashing out, but it also has an internal logic, because if you're the Palestinian people and your allies have been these Arab states, each one of which over the last 50 years have slowly abandoned you in favor of the reality of the state of Israel. We're talking Egypt, Jordan, now the Emiratis, and then soon the mother of them all, Saudi Arabia, recognizing Israel. Who do you have left to help fight for a Palestinian state? And not just for a Palestinian state, let's be clear. Hamas wants, you know, is an anti-Semitic organization, right? We are by no means in criticizing Israeli tactics and condemning the plight of the Israelis vis-a-vis the Palestinian people.
I'm definitely condemning Israeli tactics. Yeah. And you just can't justify the killing of 20,000 innocent people in order to get Hamas, because they're using them as human shields. That's not
Well, I don't think the Israelis would want you to indiscriminately kill people. I mean, that was the other big announcement, was they killed three hostages who are attempting to surrender. Right. And that tells me one thing. They're shooting people.
Indiscriminately,
even when they have white flags given, that's a universal flag of surrender. That's a war crime.
Yes. And
I mean, I understand that they may be taking advantage of that, but
I guess what my point is in terms of like, what's the end game?
Right.
And it appears that there is none.
Right.
Which means that this is going to keep going. And I mean, Biden's late to the game in trying to ask the same question that I just asked. What's the end game? What's the purpose other than is cruelty and slaughtering the point?
Right.
I mean, from both perspectives, I mean, what Hamas did is completely unacceptable.
It may be. I mean, sometimes in these religious conflicts, they have to burn themselves out. People have to get sick of war.
Let's get Alex's point of view. Thoughts?
On which particular part? I'm like,
oh, just the whole situation.
Like, well, I mean, what Hamas did again, has no excuse. I mean, it just, but the same action of the state of Israel and you know, 20,000 civilians. I mean, that's just, it's also inexcusable.
I mean, what do you think the end game is? What's going on?
There is any. I think it's one of those things where it just, it boiled over. Wasn't much a strategy here. It's just, I think, this is the consequence of just hate, letting hate get the best of us. And
yeah, I'm just trying to think of like what's speculating on the Hamas thing. Maybe it's this, they perceived that the status quo was no longer acceptable because it was the status quo was that they're just losing. The settlers are doing what they're doing. By the way, to hear that the world has condemned the settlers, I think the settlers are just insanely cruel to the point of wicked. Just the stealing land and then moving in and saying it's ours because why God gave it to me? Right. Wanted to, when you get a deed from God, signed by God, maybe I would believe you. But you're saying 2000 years ago, your idea. This is really not good, but maybe they thought that the situation is untenable. So we have to break it somehow and then take hostages. Maybe that's what they were thinking.
I think you're looking for logic and completely illogical actions.
I am. I'm trying to figure it out because it just seems like cruelty and murder for no reason.
When you get to this point where you humanize someone or a group of people as another, I mean, it's so easy to perpetrate these atrocities because you lose any connection of humanity you had with that person or that group. So and we're very much at risk of the same thing here as, you know, in our own backyard. I mean, we don't have a dialogue anymore. There's, even though we have a lot to share with our fellow citizens, I mean, there's deep divisions, and these divisions are getting bigger. I mean, we're not quite at the same extreme that you had with the tensions you have in the Middle East, but this idea of division and hate. It's not going to follow any logical lines if that's what we're looking for. I mean, hate is entirely visceral emotion. But
I have a Jewish friend who I spoke with this morning, whose wife is Palestinian, and he's raising a family, and they are a very loving couple. So it's wonderful to see that that's possible, but I'm thinking, of course it's possible. It's nothing, there should be nothing special about it. It should be commonplace. Palestinian people are often wonderful people. And I mean, some of my best friends are Jewish, but also people who have saved my life are Jewish. And I know them to be excellent people. So this is completely false. You know, going back to when Trump supporters, and Trump, by the way, he's been great to both sides, both Nazis and neo-Nazis. But early on in his first and hopefully only term, there was that insane parade in Charlottesville. And with a bunch of people in white shirts and tiki torches shouting, "Jews will not replace us." And this is insane great replacement theory that's completely false, that is propagated by Tucker Carlson and Fox News. And this, when you say this, these divisions have happened, we've had the number one, quote, news, unquote, organization in the United States propagating this kind of crap for years. And this is the whirlwind that we are reaping now, with Trump about to possibly get the nomination and possibly be reelected to the presidency on a platform borrowed from Adolf Hitler. And this is really happening right now in 2023.
That's why with our only few minutes left, I'm going to say quickly, in 2024, what am I looking forward to? The trial of Donald J. Trump. Because as Ben Ferenc said, the last surviving Nuremberg prosecutor, as a law
that I became friends with.
Yes, law, not war, and the rule of law is equally as important. So
Ferenc was right.
That's what I'm looking forward to in 2024. So we got about 2 minutes left. Each one of you, one good thing. What are you looking forward to in 2024?
But to close the year. One, I believe Trump is an insurrectionist, and as such, he does not belong on that ballot. Let's not forget, you know, we have a constitution. It's very clear where it says.
If that doesn't apply to Donald Trump, it doesn't apply to anyone.
Right. Right.
So that's what I'll leave it with.
How about you, Clark? Got 1 minute.
My vote, my thing for what my vote wishes, I want Trump to lose, of course. That's what I want. Because I'm an American.
Right.
And he's not.
Right. So with that, we're all out of time. I want to thank you for listening. Tune in next time for more of the Happy Hour. We'll see you in the new year. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye. Bye.